For September the 3rd, 2021, we talk about The Great Ace Attorney Adventures, Spookware, and T-Minus 30. Welcome to Level 384. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome, Jala.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome to everyone else as well.
Yes. Oh, hello, I single you out because it has been the longest since you've been here.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Hey, Jala, you can't walk into a party and when someone says welcome, you can't say welcome back to them.
Oh,
it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can symmetrically welcome people here.
Yeah. You can
really?
You can tell you can tell the ticket agent to have a nice flight because you have no idea they're gonna be hopping on a plane.
I have absolutely done that before. Like somebody's yeah, you know, have a good vacation. And I'm like, yeah, you too. Oh.
Hey, you know, that could be their last day. You have no way of knowing. Before we get too far in, I do want to say next week is Labor Day. Let's take that week off. No episode next week. Yeah. Just to observe.
Yeah, I will be doing a lot of labor on those days because I have days off from work, but as everybody knows, Hurricane Ida blew through Louisiana, which is nowhere near me, but that kind of has triggered oh my God, we have to finish the rest of the tree trimming because it needs to be ready for storms.
Right. Thing. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we've been chipping away at it all summer long, but like there's three trees that are pretty tall and there's a lot of limbs and we can only put so much in the trash at a time and it's very hot. You know, and it takes multiple people to do this. It's not like a one person job. So, yay!
Yeah, that sucks. did I tell you the story of when I trimmed my trees last fall before the winter storms kind of came in?
I do not know. Did you?
I had some dead limbs in the tree in my front yard. And I took a pruner, you know, like one of those ones, you know, with a long pole, and you pull the rope and it closes the blade. Got one of those and started going. And then I got stuck because I went for way too high up of a limb. Also, I had pulled it down. And so I let go of it, and now all of a sudden my my trimmer's up in the air, higher than I can reach. So
so your grasp exceeded your reach.
Yes. So I go into my garage and bring out a ladder. All I have is a 6-foot step ladder, like nothing. I put it on the ground, then I stand back and look at it. I think, oh God, no. The ground is uneven. And finally, my neighbor, I think my neighbor figured out that they were about ready to have a huge guy with his neck broken in the front lawn. And I was like, hey, do you want my tree trimmer? You can extend it longer and get that. and so that was my neighbor saved my life. So.
Oof. Yeah. Well, yeah. See, my dad, having been a contractor for a number of years, we have all kinds of ladders and various devices and tools. So it's not that. It's just these trees have been here for a very long time. They have not been trimmed since before my parents were disabled.
Oh,
so
geez.
It's been a very long time. There's a lot to do. That's all there is to say.
Do you have any non arboreal things happening?
Just that my elderly sweet doggo Poo had to go to the vet because she had some heart damage and stuff. But after a very harrowing visit, it was bad. She's very terrified of being in confined areas and things. And was stuck in a kennel at the vet all day.
Oh, geez.
So, other than the harrowing experience that she has medication, and that will treat it. So, hopefully, that will curb any additional damage happening to her. She is 11. She is a Schnauzer poodle mix. If you have not seen Pooh Bear, you are missing out. She is adorable. I post pictures of her all the time on social media.
So. Pooh Bear is a choice dog.
Yes. Very cute. So that's good news, though, because that means that she's getting treated. That just means that she has pills for the rest of her life. But eventually everybody gets there. So
yeah.
Me too, bro. Me too.
Samesies. Oh, gosh.
So how about everybody else?
Yeah. What's going on, Ben?
Not much. I got to hang out with some old coworkers over the weekend from one of my previous job at Konami. We played a whole bunch of board games, so I was super happy with that. I played my favorite board game, Gaia Project. So super happy about that. So it was a good time. Good way to spend free time.
Nice. Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
I have been doing the media circuit for Deck of Wonders.
You have. This is your third night, like going into the evening, being on a microphone.
Yeah. So you guys hopefully won't be grilling me about game mechanics and stuff like that. You can if you want to, but so there've been five big reveals that we've done total over the last couple of weeks. And so we have revealed art for the cards, Sleep, Attack Wasp, Vengeful Spirit, Pixie Cleric, and Ent Hermit, which, I acknowledge will have to be Treant Hermit when it actually goes to print for stupid copyright reasons.
Yeah.
But Ent Hermit in the interview, so whatever. But all of which is art that I'm so excited about and am very happy to be sharing with the world and has been very warmly received. But yeah, the game is, we're like finalizing stuff. I think I've said that before. Very close to going into production. And then it's just a waiting game to get it out there. So to be able to go around and talk about it and have people excited about it is a ton of fun. And it has been a lot of talking, but it has been, I've been hyping myself up. And I hope other people are feeling as hyped as I have.
you talk about like, oh, I've said that we have it finalized, but we're in the process of finalizing it. How many files on your computer right now are like file name underscore final underscore V4 underscore no really final?
Did you have my computer? Are you in my files?
No, I've just my files. I've worked in digital media creation stuff. I just know what that process is like. I've had many underscore final underscore V4s in my day.
Yep. It is that times I think there's like for like full blown pieces of art, there's like 56 or some odd like that pieces of art in the game. So it's that times 56 and then times all of the copy that goes on top of that. So, I will say working in Google Docs for a lot of it ameliorates some of that where, right. you just don't see the version. So you type final and then you go and make a little tweak and, it auto updates for everyone. So, that has probably gotten the V number down even further.
Nice.
So yeah, it is crazy town. I had that happen at my old jobs as well. And there's no better way to guarantee that there's another version of something than to type final in all caps at the end of the file name.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, the man plans, God laughs. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so that's been my week.
Yeah. And I've usual stuff over here. Quite boring. Oh, my, I've got a cat on the desk in front of me. Dottie's been very affectionate, but also that means she's being very clingy. And she has taken to sitting on the desk in front of me again, which means sitting basically right on top of my mouse and nipping at my hand anytime I try and use it. So we're dealing with that. We're dealing with her being a cat again. She had been a little bit... She just totally took a chunk out of my hand. She goes. No, she didn't bite very deep, but she it was both front paws and a big old bite, which is fine.
Sounds like a cat.
Yeah, sounds like a cat. No, that's really all that's happening. Just a bunch of boring stuff over here. So
that is sometimes a very great thing.
Yeah, boredom is a luxury.
Yeah, adora boarding is the best kind of boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that we should take the time we would normally do for extra banter here and roll that into doing the rest of a regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss? If everybody is okay with that, why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will go to you.
Well, you know, sir, you said if everybody's okay with that, but you didn't even pause for a second before you just rolled right into it. It's not like you were actually asking, you know. I mean, like, that's okay. That's okay. You can assume.
No, okay. All right. Okay. Okay. All
right. Anyway, yes. So I played a couple of games. The first one I'll talk about is one called either Scribbled or Scribd, depending upon what screen you're looking at.
Oh, I that say is a this, very long title.
Yes, indeed. So on the eStore, it has a corrected title screen that shows Scribbled. But actually on my Switch screen, the little image and the text above it say Scribd. So I've hashtagged it as Scribd, if you're wondering, okay, on Twitter when you see it. Because I like that typo. It makes me happy. Because they managed to somehow get the typo in the front of there. Anyway, so continuing my theme of if you really want to make a game, just do it. Here's another budget game, if you can't already infer that. So I wanted to talk about this in combination with Drongin, which I talked about the last time I was on. But due to time constraints, I had not gotten to this one yet. So... in either case, it is 100% handmade, drawn on paper with pen, developed by Willems Studio. And I don't know if that's Williams or Willems, because okay, now I'm doubting everything. And
it's Will anyway, I Am's Studio.
Right, right. But anyway, it was released in July of this year. It's a platformer. It's $1.99 in the eShop, and I bought it on sale. So I don't even think I paid a dollar for it. So that's where we're rolling with this. You go from left to right across a level armed with a sword collecting dollar signs. They don't even have, like, you know, coins or anything. It's a dollar sign. And kill creatures along the way as you jump through a series of different platforms and such. Dollars are worth 1 point, and every type of critter you kill is worth a varying number of points. And the goal is, of course, to collect as many points as you can and to ideally get all of everything. Kill every single critter. And also get every single dollar. But the dollars disappear after a certain amount of time. So you have to move quickly if you want to do all of those things.
Okay.
So it got very, very simple sound effects and a tiny little bleep bloop music track on loop that's maybe 20 seconds long. And it's just on loop in the background. It's very calming, though. So, like, it's not irritating to listen to or anything. Okay. So... that's like a step up from Drongin, which didn't have any music at all. So
it was atmospheric.
Yeah. Yes. So this one still serves as a decently challenging little platformer. I have gone through the whatever level I'm on at the moment. It tells you how many times you've tried it over. I've died like 20 times so far in the level I'm in. So, and it wasn't just me. Dave started playing some of it and he started dying too. And then he handed it back and was like, okay, have fun with that. So he doesn't have any tolerance for stuff that's, you know, super, like, you know, frustrating or anything. Yeah. So
that's frustrating. Anyway, why would he?
Yeah, exactly. So... although he did play, like, Dark Souls games and stuff, so I don't know how that works out. But whatever, that's fine. So another thing to note is that you have to consider your sword strokes, because when you attack, you can miss if your sword timing is not correct. But also you can do double hits. So it does have a little bit more to it than just a super simple platformery thing. But that's it. It's a very basic game. There's not a story. It's just a platformer.
Okay.
So wait, when you say double hits, do you mean like one swing can hit twice or like two quick swings?
One swing can hit twice. Oh. So you have to time it just right. And if you hit it at, you know, the right angle or whatnot, it will hit two times count as two hits, and it has like a little pow mark, I guess you could say, whenever you hit, so you can tell when you've done one or two hits. And mm-hmm. also there's an audio cue. So
yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yep. So I linked a Twitch. I actually have links to my Twitter so you guys can see it in the backstage. So if you want to see, that mm-hmm. is what it looks like.
Yeah. So,
yes, it is just a simple little platforming game. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm trying to find this on other platforms because it's
I don't think it is.
Yeah. It's really rare that you see that. Like, I wouldn't expect somebody's only I would expect somebody to put it on itch first as opposed to going right to Nintendo. Oh, but good for them mm-hmm. for getting it on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows? But anyway, so that was just like a companion piece to the budget games and the hand drawn on a piece of paper thing. Like, if you can't afford art assets, don't worry. Yep. You yep. can still make a game. Kudos to this person for making the game.
Yeah.
Well, and I have
it's,
to wonder.
It's functional. It's I can't complain about it. It's a functional game. Ship it. Cool. Mm-hmm. So has challenge to it. Great.
I don't think that there's a system left that doesn't have some kind of like indie support budget or program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to imagine people are going through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice.
So that's one. Real neat. Any questions about Scribd/Scribbled?
Do you know how many levels there are to the game?
I have no idea. You cannot find information about this game on the internet.
Okay.
Trust me, I'm trying.
I accuse you of hallucinating this game, except you've got screenshots.
Yeah, I'm looking.
I have video, yeah.
Oh, you could have made that. Like, nobody. Oh, like, it's impossible to make video. No,
think I have the spare time for that, sir? No.
All right, next time I need you holding an iPhone camera and moving it in slow, non-concentric circles as you play.
I'm looking at the eShop entry on Nintendo's site, so it does exist.
Yes, it does exist. So anyway, yeah, so that's that game. The other thing I have been playing of the late is the Great Ace Attorney Adventures.
Hmm.
Okay. I struggled to get that out, but so it goes. So anyway,
like, this they game... struggled to get the misogyny out of Ace. No, I'm joking.
So this was originally released to the 3DS in 2015 with Android and iOS versions in 2017. It was then re-released, bundled with the 2017 sequel, The Great Ace Attorney 2 Resolve, for Switch, PS4, and Windows as The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles. I pre-ordered this and I had it on my birthday, but at the time I was also given a game by Dave for my birthday. So I played that game first and then started this one once I finished the other one. So in either case, I've completed the first two adventures out of five, and I'm somewhere in the beginning of the third adventure at this point.
Is the first one the one that takes place in England, or is it the one that's in Japan?
The first chapter or adventure is in Japan. Then you are on a ship going to Britain, and then you are in Britain.
Gotcha.
So the third episode or adventure, rather, is in Britain. So I assume the rest of it will be in Britain as well. Yeah. So each of the individual adventures has taken about 3 hours, maybe 4 hours to play. I don't know. I wasn't really clocking it. I just have an impression that it was a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it tracks to about how long any particular like day of the trial takes in the original Ace Attorney mm-hmm. trilogy. So to review, I played Ace Attorney and Justice for All, but I have not yet played the third game in the original series because I'm waiting for Cole. I'm waiting for Cole to finish the second game so we can record about
it. You're cutting
out. I even have some notes that I started writing, man. Hop to it.
You're cutting out.
Is Craig failing right now? I'm not sure.
Discord.
Not that you have, you know, other stuff to do with your life or anything and, you know, work and so on and assignment play. But anyway, so in either case, in Adventure 1, it takes place during the Meiji era of Japan, which is the Victorian era of Britain. So in Adventure 1, you are playing Naruhodo Ryunosuke, who is Phoenix Wright, aka Naruhodo Ryuichi's ancestor. He is an English student at a university, and his friend, Asogi Kazuma, studies law. And the idea of defense lawyers at this point was only a few years old at that time in Japan as the game starts. So Asogi was already qualified to stand in court as a lawyer. And so he aims to transform the legal system of Japan by studying in Britain and bringing what he learns back home. And it's laid out just like other installments in the Ace Attorney series, where you have investigation portions and courtroom battles. During the investigation, you explore areas to gather evidence and testimonies, and during the courtroom phase, you find contradictions in witness testimony and use evidence to figure out the truth of what happened in the case. And this title, as in apparently Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, sometimes you have to cross-examine multiple witnesses at the same time.
Yes. I played the Professor Layton one. It's good. You do have to go back and forth to get one to contradict the other at the same time.
Yeah. So like in the first case, getting back to Adventure 1 in particular, Naruhodo is accused of killing an English professor in a restaurant and has asked his friend Asogi to represent him in court. However, if Asogi does this and fails to win a not guilty verdict, his invitation to study law in Britain will be revoked, as this is the death of an Englishman, allegedly by a Japanese person, and it's highly politically charged, and it's like all military people watching the trial. Mm-hmm. So when Naruhodo realizes this, he elects to represent himself with Asogi as his judicial assistant. And Asogi, by the way, in my opinion, is much better as a mentor than Mia. Mm-hmm. So this game is presented in 3D, and the smoother animations allow for more body language than in the earlier sprite animated titles. I was not really sure if I'd like it, but it grew on me as soon as we got into court, because at the start of the trial, Naruhodo is very timid, and where Asogi is confident and collected and slamming his fist onto the podium, Naruhodo is standing bolt upright nervously with his eyes shifting around and his shoulders all hyped up, and he's sweating and he's twitchy. And when he slaps his hand down onto the podium, it's like he's trying to mimic his friend, but like he is just looking at his hands for a second, like, ouch, and then continues on with what he was going to say. But then, and not only that, but the sound effect is like super light slappy sound versus the thud whenever his friend slams his fist down. And later on, though, as the trial progresses and he gains confidence, he slams his hand down and it sounds just like his friend's thunk, and he doesn't do that thing where he looks at his hands. He's not doing that anymore by the end of the trial. So like you notice changes in the characters as stuff progresses, and that's very cute.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea that it's like playing a guitar. You need to build up some calluses.
Right. So anyway, the tutorial, which is basically the first, even though the first trial is like 3 hours long, it is also a tutorial one. Mm-hmm. And it also has the tutorial prosecutor's ancestor.
Oh,
in the American version, his name is Winston Payne. In Japanese, his name is Aochi Takefumi. See what they did there?
That's really good. Yeah.
So I genuinely laughed out loud when I saw Aochi in this game, because he's like super samurai guy that looks exactly the same.
Even he's got the opaque glasses and the
in the same haircut, except now he's got the little top knot on and everything. It's pretty great.
My favorite version of him is the one that has the pathetic comb over. I think that's in the second or the third. Yeah. When he tries to get his groove back.
That's pretty great. Well, so unfortunately, the first trial also features a super racist and condescending white lady, Karen, whom I could barely handle being in the game. And I was like, my tolerance level was not there. And I was talking about this with my little Discord group, but one person who happens to be a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant said that sort of thing didn't really bother him. And my response was automatically like, well, yeah, you're a white male living in an overwhelmingly white area of the country. You haven't really had to deal with it, you know?
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
Well, I mean...
No, I'm just doing the meme. You know,
He admitted, you know, that's the situation. And we had a really good discussion about it. But my point in mentioning that is that the tolerance for this character will probably vary a good deal. So even though I cannot handle her, somebody else might be like, oh, okay, whatever. It's cool. You know, like, I can tolerate this just fine.
She's a villain, right?
She's a villain. So also, she has a very fancy hat that has a swan on it. And at the end, like, the way that her, you know, like, she loses her shit at the end of the trial thing.
Oh, tell me it lays an egg. Please tell me it lays an egg.
Better. Look in the backstage. It's pinned for anybody else who wants to see it. It's pinned to my Twitter, so you can see it.
I saw this one. It is excellent.
It is great. The ending.
Of course, Twitter's being a dick.
Aww.
we go straight past eggs and two chicks falling out of
directly
the hat.
Directly chicks being, and then like it's very cute because there's all these little yellow chicks except for one black chick that's sitting on Ouchie's desk.
Uh-huh.
And like one of them is like pecking at the judge's stuff. I don't know, it's very cute.
Yeah. Oh, so. That's good. She gets so angry that her bird gives live birth, which is not a thing that happens. That's very
cool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the bird on top of her hat, because she's a ridiculous, you know, English person from the Victorian era, is actually alive and starts squawking and flapping. And then like at one point, once, you know, when she's agitated, and then when it culminates, he just starts shitting chicks everywhere. It's pretty great.
Shitting chicks can't be a title.
I know. But still.
But I want it to be. It has all of the energy of a title.
So, I guess you could change it to crapping chicks. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, so in Adventure 2, after the first trial, which you win, of course, Sogi proceeds onward to England and convinces Naruhodo to come with him as a stowaway in his trunk, because Sogi wants Naruhodo to help him with some kind of personal mission he has for his time in London. Unfortunately, there's a death on the ship, and Naruhodo ends up being accused of killing someone a second time. Gee, I've heard this line before.
Right,
Larry Butts was not accused twice, but popped up in a couple of trials. Oh, so this time you don't have an official courtroom, but you do meet Sherlock Holmes. He was called in the English release Herlock Sholmes. Because some parts of the Holmes materials are copyrighted and not public domain, but his name is Holmes in the original, and I am not calling him some jacked up, inverted, whatever. That's... So anyway, Holmes is absolutely insufferable. He's a goofy weirdo who comes up with all of these deductions that are sort of right and sort of totally off the mark at the same time, and that leads to a new mechanic in the game. It's called the Dance of Deduction.
Okay.
So I linked a image in, or a video in the backstage. So he does his little dance by himself where he spits out stuff and he's kind of on the right track, and then he gets stuff wrong. And then on the second half, you come in to course correct him, and Naruhodo starts, you know, interrupting Sherlock and correcting whatever. And when that happens, you have to find the correct clue from the evidence that you have and also from the witness's person. And you have to fix his theories. So sometimes this includes inspecting the witness from different angles, kind of like you can examine evidence from different angles in order to find less obvious clues. And sometimes it's just presenting a certain piece of evidence or whatever to, you know, fix what he's talking about because he did the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So it's actually, that part is really fun, but it's super fruity and flowery and I don't know, very fancy pants. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So Anyway, you also interact more with Susato, who is a young woman who was originally Asogi's judicial assistant, who ends up assisting Naruhodo in his investigation, much like how Maya functions with Phoenix Wright.
Okay.
So she's far more tolerable to me than Maya or whatever the smallest child's name was. Was it Pokemon Shining Pearl?
It's Pearl. Yeah. I don't know about the Pokemon Shining part.
Pokemon Shining. That's the beginning part. They didn't tell you that in the game, but that's what it is. Anyway, it's still sometimes rather ridiculous what some of the stuff she says. And she says some naive stuff. Mostly it's played for laughs or to allow Naruhodo to mansplain the situation.
Okay.
So, okay. You know, because like she also is an avid lover of detective novels and stuff and mystery novels. So she also tends to say a bunch of crap, mostly because she's like, oh, it's like in this novel and this thing happened. So that's the thing, you know, like she comes across armor, suits of armor in Britain. And then she's like, oh, these are called suits of armor, you know, because like at first Naruhodo's like, is that like a foo dog in Japan? You know, and then she's like, no, these are suits of armor and they walk around castles at night and they're haunted, you know, because like that's what she knows from her books. And so that's what she, you know, identifies with them. So so anyway, in Adventure 3, at least so far that I played, you've arrived in London and have to take up a trial for a man convicted of murder who can't get anybody else to defend him because the prosecutor is called the Grim Reaper and has never lost a case. That also sounds real familiar.
It does.
So, trials at this point, I have not gotten to this mechanic, but I have looked up information about it. Trials apparently feature a jury rather than just the one judge once you are in Britain. Although like the jurors, they can interrupt the trial at any time and enter in their vote of guilty or not guilty. And if all of the jurors vote guilty or, you know, the majority votes one way or the other, then they automatically have that verdict. However, the player can also present a summation examination after the verdict, during which they interview the jurors and can attempt to change their minds. If, after the closing argument, the player has persuaded at least 4 out of 6 of them to withdraw their guilty verdict, the court acknowledges the misalignment and the trial continues. So I know that's definitely going to happen in this case.
Oh, yeah,
because,
no.
You know, if the player fails, the verdict stays and the trial is over. So we'll see how that goes. But you get introduced to your 6 jurors. I've already seen them at the beginning. So, you know, here it goes. But also the dude, the guy that's the prosecutor, he's like an Alucard looking motherfucker. And then like the judge looks like
also
Santa.
Can't be a title.
I know. You can put Alucard looking MF-er. That's fine. But anyway, you can edit me sort of. Anyway. So the judge looks like Santa. So, okay, you've got Alucard and Santa. Here we are. But anyway, so we'll see how that goes. I do not know yet.
Nice. Yeah, I imagine that the different the different jurors all like have particular things that they care about and different angles that you would use to get at them and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So far, I will say I like the graphics in this a lot better than I thought I would. I also really like the music and the sound details that they've added to it. Like I said, with Naruhodo slapping the stand at the beginning, it sounds really impotent versus how he slams his hands down at the end of the first trial and things like that. Like those touches and all of the body language stuff is just great.
Yeah.
And honestly, I am enjoying this one, even with the Karen lady in the first trial. I'm enjoying this better than I enjoyed either of the first two original Ace Attorney games.
Well, yeah, so. that's the reason they've had a lot of time to learn between when they made this one.
Yeah. This has an overarching storyline that's like all connected and it naturally flows and everything.
Yeah.
And like, I like the main characters more than I like the characters in the original and things like that. So, you know, that makes a difference.
Yeah. I was also skeptical of the move to 3D when they went to the 3DS games. And I was pretty quickly won over because, you know, good design is good design. And the animations work. I've got a soft spot for the nice big sprites of the old games. But, you know, sometimes things have to get modernized. And I'd rather them do 3D than do the weird flash looking stuff that they have in the remasters of Ace Attorney, the trilogy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. No, it's it looks interesting. I'm baffled that they brought this here.
Baffled?
Oh no, just I didn't think that they would find a way to localize this in a way that
it's a happy baffled.
Okay. It just, especially because you know, like the 3DS ones, you know, they were digital only, and that kind of led me to believe that they're, you know, the franchise had always been a little bit of a cult favorite, but they you know, I thought maybe there's just too much work, there's not enough reward to bring it over. And apparently, it both panned out because these are good, and I understand that these sold pretty well. So, thumbs up, Ace Attorney, baby. Yeah,
that's all I got.
Cool. I'm gonna go because I have two new ones. Ooh. In addition to Chrono Cross, which I've been streaming to twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. During the day. Last weekend, I streamed a new one published by DreadX, a company that does that publishes indie horror game stuff. I streamed Spookware, which is loosely, it was marketed to me as a horror themed WarioWare. And that is definitely in there, but the broader kind of game itself is a very cute adventure game that is kind of styled after the kind of town navigation and, you know, light puzzling that you get in a Paper Mario game, to the point where the entire thing looks very Paper Mario-y.
Paper Morrowind. I want to see that.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Oh, give me Paper Morrowind.
This gives me real Murder Trivia Party vibes.
Yeah. This is even a little bit more toothless than that. Like, I'm happy that I streamed it because it's real cute and fun and quite inventive. I don't know who this is for. Which is a weird thing. Okay, so the concept is you are playing as a group of three skeleton brothers. They're named after the position that they sit on the couch. There's Lefty, Mitty, and Righty, and they all have different different personalities. And they spend all their time watching horror movies. And they decide, why don't we go out and see the world? And then the first like episode that you get here is three chapters, and it's all kind of like them getting into wacky hijinks in this world where everybody is a skeleton, and you know, it's the same, you know, it's just like real life, except everything is a little bit spooky themed. And instead of doing like combat, or instead of, you know, solving a puzzle, what you do is you play WarioWare style micro games that all have a kind of a horror theme to them. When I say I don't know who this is for, everything outside of the micro games is this really, you know, fun, gentle, you know, just kind of like pun based, like not really scary outside of a couple of nightmare sequences that imply there's like bad stuff going on that you're not seeing. Like that all is very Paper Mario EE to the point where I would say like, oh yeah, like this would be really cool to give to somebody who's like, you know, 10 or 12 or something like that. Right. It's just kind of like that. Not bad, but just gentle. Right.
It's the Homestar Runner audience.
Yeah. And then you get into the micro games and it's like, all right, chop off all the fingers. And then there's just like a hand on a cutting board, and you have to like press down to chop down, and then press left to swipe the finger off. You know, it's all kind of gross stuff. It's like, put mustard on the hot dog, and it's like a hot dog on a bun. Then a guy's like holding his arm over it, and you have to like stab some scissors across the arms, and mustard comes out onto the hot dog. Like, you know, skewer all the eyes, and you know there's a bunch of like eyes on a plate, and you're controlling like a toothpick that is, you know, skewering the eyes. Like, it's all, you know, pretty gross stuff, right? To the point where it would probably be, I don't know, pretty upsetting to somebody as young as the broad game itself is. You know, kind of, it feels like it is appealing to or aiming at. So
maybe it was like two different teams doing the two different parts of the game, and they just had very different ideas of what the game was going to be.
Yeah, and they just didn't communicate. So like, it's fun and it's funny and it has like a good, you know, a tremendous amount of charm. I wish that the ratio of like WarioWare micro games was a little bit higher compared to the walking around and talking stuff, but I generally like, outside of a visual novel or adventure game, prefer things to be less talky, you know, just in general. So, you know, that could just be my bias, but like, it's neat and I'm excited to see more, cause I'm intrigued about like the scary meta stuff that they're implying about it.
What has been your favorite mini game so far?
Favorite mini game so far. I'm trying to think. I named the hot dog one. The hot dog one is very good.
Okay.
let's say that. I need to jog my memory, because like they're all pretty good. They're cute in their own way, and they have their own little like, you know, just like tagline at the end of them for if you succeed or if you fail.
Again, the trivia murder party vibes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But
do they all just use the arrow keys?
There are some chapters that use the mouse. Okay. So there's some of them that use the mouse. The middle chapter of the first episode that I played also concerns a murder on a boat, Jala. You are going around and gathering evidence and doing Phoenix, you know, very light Phoenix Wright style, like trial and contradiction and evidence presentation, kind of segments to get people to confess what they were up to. Right. So it's cute. It's really neat, but I gotta say if you're not like completely 100% in the pocket for whatever divided mind they're aiming for, one side or the other may end up bugging you a bit.
This is like when I, you know, tell an adult colleague, like, I gotta go to the potty real quick. Like, you know, this is someone who is using kiddo language all day and can't quite get it out of their heads.
Yeah, yeah. Or like when I tell a 4-year-old, hey, I gotta go rock a piss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's neat. I enjoyed streaming that over the course of those 2 days. Any other questions about Spookware?
It looks sweet. Yeah. Do you know how long the game is to play?
I did it over the course of like the first episode was about 4 hours of streaming. But that was with me reading all the dialogue and, you know, messing around and doing stuff. So, you know.
Yeah. Let's see how long it takes for a speedrun community to pop up for it.
Probably, you know, people speedrun lots of stuff.
Oh, every game's got a speedrun community.
Oh, of course. Yeah. The other game that I have been playing, I just saw this pop up on Twitter. Somebody talked about it, and I have had a hankering for some city building stuff, and I'm really happy that I took the plunge on it, because, well, you'll learn why. It's called T-30. Okay. So the idea of this is the world is going to end. There are a bunch of asteroids headed toward Earth. You have 30 minutes to place buildings and gather and generate enough resources to build rockets to get everybody, you know, to get as many people as possible off of the planet before it, before everything goes boom. You have 30 minutes no matter what. You can't like pause and issue commands. Like if you're paused, you're like in a blank menu. You know, if you at the end, whoever you end up saving is who you end up saving, and you get like a little star rating at the end of it. There are multiple different kinds of scenarios that all have kind of different starting maps, different available space and available resources at the start and things like that. But the time limit that is here is both very stressful and I think a really good idea for this kind of game, where my inclination when I play a city builder, and I don't know if anybody else has this, is, you know, I'm taking my time and I am just effectively treating it as though it is an engine that will run forever. And I am, you know, at a leisurely pace, you know, solving problems as they pop up and optimizing it and just being real precious about everything. When you know that you have 30 minutes and every second counts, the entire 30 minutes matters. And so every decision that you make, in kind of this build order, it's a little bit like the opening, like the opening minutes of a real-time strategy game. Like if you're playing multiplayer where, you know, you have to have this many, worker units by this time or else you're going to be completely behind the curve. Right.
And does it lend itself to that kind of StarCraft clicks per minute?
I have no idea. I'm not, I can't do any clicks per minute. I'm negative clicks per minute. clicks are draining away from me as we speak. but yeah, it does have kind of like a frantic, you know, I don't have time to plan this. I just kind of have to put stuff down and we're going to deal with the consequences as it goes. And you're gathering resources. So like you have to, you know, build a well and that generates water around it. And then you, you know, put a farmer on that, that generates food. And then you can place your housing, which generates workers. It's like, you know, housing plus, food equals workers, and workers can go into reclamation sites and also work like logging and quarries and stuff like that to get stone and different kinds of things. And you're just trying to get enough of these materials while expanding and building your power grid and scouting the map for different resource nodes and making the most economical use of your space to maintain like, you know, the correct ratio of stuff coming in order to build the different kind of rockets that will, save another 400, another 10,000, another 20,000 people to get off the planet. Right. It's real cool because again, it gives you that impetus and, you know, you are, you know, it's almost like an idle game or it's almost like any other kind of, you know, city builder management sim where you're trying to make sure that you have the right economy built up, the right ratios of stuff coming in at the correct rate, over the course of everything. But with the time crunch, again, you have no ability to like fret about anything. It's build or die. That is neat. And also I like that it's just around a half hour round, which makes it easier for me to say, I will play one of these and then go, as opposed to if I sat down at any other city builder and it'd be like, okay. And then it's 2 AM and I am behind.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm behind on everything and oh God, I feel terrible. It's really neat. I like it quite a bit.
In a way, it seems like the inverse of that city builder we talked about, where the idea is to like restore the environment and leave as little of a footprint as possible.
Yeah.
And this one, it's like, all right, burn it all down. it's all going anyway.
All this is fucked anyway. we're getting out of here. Yeah. No, you're plowing down mountains and forests and stripping buildings for parts and all that. Like,
I like the fact that how in most like strategy games like this, you're trying to think like long about like what the best long-term decision is for your city, but in this it's kind of like butting up against that, and it's like that might not necessarily be a good idea because you might not be around that long. So
yeah I know, it just like, yeah, I'm not necessarily looking for, you know, slow burn efficiency. Like, I'm going to need to make some decisions early on that get me to the point where I can, you know, it doesn't matter if I lay down like low efficiency housing at the start, kind of around my initial node, I'm going to find more space. I need to get as much stone and mineral as possible so I can build higher efficiency power, because I know the power is going to be my bottleneck later on. It's all about kind of identifying these kind of like midterm bottlenecks and trying to get past those.
Does that mean your effectively your central hub kind of moves as you play, as it's like, all right, well, I'm not gonna super optimize one area over and over. I'm just gonna, when I need to build the new nice thing, I put it somewhere else, and then everything else crops up around that.
Yeah, and like I'm not very far in, but there are definitely scenarios where space is constrained enough that I've started like ripping out old things and replacing it with higher efficiency versions of those those ones. Mm-hmm. But that is like not necessarily called for in early level play, you know, where you're trying to hit something that's just kind of sufficient, right? The central hub is there as your starting point, but you're going to be building out in every direction, hoping that you don't run up against a body of water where that'll stop your progress. You know, like, oh, there's nothing for me out there. Shit.
This looks really cool. The visualization of people moving around the roads is making my head hurt.
You don't really have to worry about that, which is nice. That's literally just... If a road connects two different sites, that means that work can travel along them. It's basically just showing you like it's like electrical current. Yes, work can potentially flow through here.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it's not modeling like traffic or anything like that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. I'm like, this looks like everything's got the same icon. I can't tell when there's one unit that's moving multiple ways or, okay. It's just abstracted.
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. So, and who knows, I may hit a ceiling. Like, the different scenarios may end up being a little bit too samey for me, but like, this has been very good for me because I've been in a bit of a time crunch, here for the past few weeks, coming off of a particularly busy, August. That having one where it's like, okay, I can sit down, I can budget an hour for this, and I can get two full rounds in. And that is cool and good and enough for me. Yeah.
Sometimes that is a super important thing, to have something you can play in a short amount of time.
Absolutely.
More bite-sized games, please.
Please. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, God, just a bite-sized version of something that is normally sprawling like this. It is a very good idea.
Hey man, that's like the concept behind Deck of Wonders. I'm all for it.
Yeah. No. I've got work tomorrow. Like, make it make it bite-sized, please.
And then if you want to spend 6 hours on it, you do, 12 rounds of this half hour game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It appears that one of the developers also made a game called 20 Minute Metropolis, which I am also very curious about. Cool. Yeah, that came out last year and seems to have a very similar concept to this.
How did you find out about the game?
Literally, it was just on Twitter. It was just an account that I follow that tweets about new Steam stuff, and I was like, oh yeah, this looks really cool. I want to check this out. This seems like it's right up my alley at the moment, and it was so
sweet.
So that's all I got. Spookware and T-30.
Cool.
Yeah.
I will say that you've got more than I have, so I will volunteer to go next so that we don't end on my disappointing note.
Well, you've been real busy with Deck of Wonder stuff, but what have you been playing?
Yeah. So I've only been playing my current kind of go-tos, nothing new to report. So I'm just going to give a quick hit on each of these.
Okay.
But all of them you've heard before. I've played more Jupiter Hell. I've been playing on the medium difficulty. It is harder.
Okay. That checks out.
The cool thing to note is that I may have gotten a feature into the game.
Oh.
So the game has a Discord, and I posted about, when you move from place to place, since everything is turn-based, you want to go quickly. Like, you want to go quickly from area to area when there's no enemies on screen. But one extra tap when an enemy does show up puts you at a severe disadvantage. And so you almost like have to wait between each movement just to make sure you don't get going too quick and not realize there's an enemy on the screen and yeah. screw yourself.
Give them a huge heads up and getting in position. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I just pushed on the Discord, like, it would be really cool if there was like a button you could hold that's like move unless enemy. You know, that way you can go quickly from place to place when you don't think there's an enemy there. But if there is, you don't waste turns. And like a week later, they announced that feature was in the game.
Oh, nice.
So it's probably hubris because, you know, that something like that, I don't know if you can just do it in a couple days, right? it's probably something they were already working on or something like that. But I like the idea that spurred them on to do it. So.
I mean, at the very least, that feature that helps is in the game now. And also, even if it wasn't you had an idea good enough that it was going to get in there anyway. So
it affirmed their suspicions at the very least.
Yeah, you were vibing. You were vibing with the game to the point where, you know, just like, yeah, this is something that makes sense. So
yeah,
don't second guess yourself, buddy.
Yeah. So that's Jupiter Helm. Final Fantasy 14, I'm still playing. I'm through that lull phase that I talked about. It's fine. Not really a lot to say there. I've been playing a lot more Splitgate. They released their Season 0. I think last week they were on the verge of releasing it. So now they have their first official, like, full season of content. It's all cosmetics, et cetera. Which is weird when the game colors your enemies all red. It feels a bit weird to be like, hey, get all these different color cosmetics. And it's like, no, it's just going to be red. So why do that? the one reason I might buy in is the very first thing is a weapon skin. And it is like a cardboard cutout version of your battle rifle, which is hilarious. It's like a kid's toy that someone assembled a cardboard box into the shape of this battle rifle.
Yeah.
And the sight is a toilet paper tube. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I've seen pictures like people straight away went and made like real life versions of it. And it's adorable. I don't know if that's going to be enough to get me to buy in, but there's some good stuff in there, but the character skins just make no sense because, you know, everyone's red anyway. So that's Splitgate, nothing too crazy there. And then finally I've been playing more Trackmania, and the one new thing here is I've been participating in a BASCO competition, which stands for Build a Stage Competition.
Okay.
And it's basically like Exquisite Corpse Poetry, but for a track.
Oh.
Where, you know, the first round, everyone submits just a 10-minute start to, or sorry, 10-minute, wow, 10-second start to a track. And you just place like an artificial temporary finish line just so you can, you know, so it can be posted.
Right.
But otherwise, it is not complete. Judges will then race all the tracks and vote on the one that they think has the most potential or is the most interesting. And then for round two, everyone takes that and builds another 10-second segment on top of that. So it's just it's a really cool micro building exercise. We're in stage six now. So this has gone through, six different cycles. We're coming close to the end. So they have, I think, it's either six or seven stages for track building, and then they have a stage for scenery building, which is a cool concept. And it's been really fun. None of my submissions have won, but the idea of like, hey, here's a little, you know, a prompt, essentially track building prompt, build a 10 second segment on top of this, is really, really inspiring and has me experimenting and doing things that, you know, probably don't deserve to have an entire track dedicated to them, but fit really well as a little 10-second segment.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like participating, that would be a good way to get out of some ruts if you're a designer who'd been working for a while.
Yep. Or even just like, if you're like me, like you feel pretty competent at track building, but you feel completely incompetent at scenery. Being able to put it together and know like, okay, well, there's a stage at the end where they do scenery, so I don't have to manage any of that. That is quite liberating.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just on the old standbys, that can be nice. We'll hopefully have new stuff to report on next week.
Yeah. And if you don't, that's fine too. And also, we're not here next week. It's Labor Day.
Oh, I've got 2 weeks, and I have a goal of definitely reporting on something new in 2 weeks.
Cool. That was Jupiter, Hell, Splitgate, and Trackmania.
And Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah.
Which was a complete non.
Oh, yeah. I didn't write it down because you said you said two sentences about it. hope that's okay. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I just got one new one this week. I've been playing, I think, because I was kind of busy over the weekend, but I've been playing a game called Storybook Brawl, which is a newish game that came out within the past few months. It's in early access. I heard about it through a friend, and I saw a couple streamers that I watched playing it. It's basically similar to like an auto chess type game, except it has a skin of like fairy tales. So I haven't really played too many auto chess games, so this is kind of my first like jump into it. But in this variant, I guess instead of like picking characters and the characters have stats, it's instead you pick a card and the card has a description similar to like Magic, and it's either spells or creatures. Mm-hmm. And then it looks very similar to Hearthstone as far as like you have a character that represents you and they attack that.
I'm getting real Hearthstone vibes from the aesthetic and from the interface.
Yeah, and so it kind of is like a melding of a couple different concepts in other places. But essentially, it's kind of like playing a Magic game as you're drafting your deck is kind of what the gameplay feels like. Mm-hmm. You pick a leader is the first thing you do. You play online with eight other people, and you keep playing until there's only one person left. It counts as a win if you make it in the top four, but you get like better and better rewards the higher you place.
It looks two-sided from what I'm looking at. So how does the eight players work? Are you only up against one at a time, or?
Yes. Yeah. So it's like a tournament. So it's like four matches of one-on-one. And I'm not sure how the matchmaking works as far as like, when you get paired up with each person. I think it's like seemingly random because it's set up ahead of time, because like there might be runs where you'll face like first place, second place, third place in a row or something like that. And when you're like in dead last or something, and it's like, well, that doesn't seem fair. But and then other times you're placed like very evenly with other people. So it seems like it's predetermined because it's not like based on what your score is. But the idea is like it has about the same type of complexity as a single set from Magic, where there's a certain number of kind of like keywords on each card that kind of correspond to strategies that you can go for. Some examples of this, there's one called like Final Breath, which means when they die, some ability happens. There's one where when you kill a person, something happens, stuff like that. Definitely mechanics that have been used like in other games, so not necessarily wholly original or anything like that.
Can we standardize the name for those? Because I feel like every card game has to have their own take on what Death Rattle is or what have you.
Yeah, the problem is I think people copyright them, and so then you can't use that standard anymore. Yeah. So that's why I know, like, I think it's like Life Steal in Hearthstone, but it's like Life Link in Magic. But they're the same thing, I guess. So it's pretty addictive. It's also like pretty short too. If you're doing poorly, you'll get knocked out pretty quickly, so you can like fire another game up if that's the case.
Is that a battle royale of auto battlers?
Wait, what?
I said, wait, is this a battle royale of auto battlers?
What do you mean, battle royale?
If you're doing poorly, you'll get knocked out quick and you can start again.
Yeah, you can do that for sure. And so I've played it for about maybe like 5 or 6 hours, and I got my first win was the last game that I played playing online. So I was happy with that. But I'm kind of curious to know like how, if you can make like any sort of strategy work, or if there's like two or three pretty defined like strategies that work all the time, and then you can't really get past that. It seems like your leader can pretty easily be a dud or like not worthwhile at all. And then on the opposite side of it, it seems like you can get a leader that's like pretty busted. The economy of the game, again, it's still in early access, but there's like, I think there's basically two different types of economies. There's the one that you get as a reward for winning, and there's the one that you buy in. And then at the beginning of any game, you have an option of four leaders, and two of them you just can pick. And then the other two you can pay to get either with your in-game rewards or like money that you paid in. It's like that stuff I'm not as into because it's like this isn't as like, I guess, well-defined as like Magic or whatever. And it's in early access. So I'm like, I don't really want to like pay any money to that or anything like that. No. But it's pretty like out of the way. It's not like kind of like trying to lane you into that or anything. So at least that part's good. But yeah, it's kind of interesting, the balancing on this. Like so every round, basically the way it works, there's a buy round and then there's like an auto chess round where you fight with people. A difference between this game and other games, there's not like an interest mechanic, so you're not really incentivized to like hold back and like build up interest. To the contrary, you're trying to spend everything you got and then like maximize the use of money that you have to make sure you know that you're doing it well. There's a cool mechanic where you can, I don't know if other games have this, other auto chess games have this or not, so I don't know how many of these mechanics I'm redescribing, but you can lock the current state of the shop and so that you'll come back to that if you like end on a card that you're interested in but you don't have any money left.
Oh, so does that take resources?
No, locking and unlocking is free, so you don't have to do that. You can re-roll the shop for like a single gold. The amount of gold that you get escalates each round. So first round's two, then three, then four, then five.
No.
And then also, so the card cost will also increase as your hero's level increases. So there's like an experience meter that'll dial up with each battle, win or lose. There's also some like spells that will increase your hero's experience so that you can get to higher levels faster, including there's also one leader that's like a time traveler where he starts off at like level three and then gets access to like higher cards, but it's still kind of broke. So, so there's like interesting mechanics going on. I don't know. So, I mean, like on first blush, once you get the rules, it's like pretty fun to play and it's pretty easy to queue up and play online. There weren't any issues as far as like syncing or anything like that. And you can quit anytime. If you're having a bad time, you just quit. And then I think the only thing that manifests is sometimes you play like a goo individual, either if there's an odd number of people or somebody like quit who you're supposed to pair up with. But usually if they're in the state where they have quit, then that usually means it's going to be an easy round and you can win.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of like permanent results to the battles. The way it works is based on the end of the battle, based on how definitively you won or got beaten, that's how much damage you deal to the opponent. So you start with 40 hit points and like you take as little as three if it's like a minor win or loss, and then it can go up to like maybe 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 maybe towards the end game if it's like really powerful people. The other thing that they have that's similar to SNKRX is if you collect three of a common type, it'll upgrade the unit. Most of them have just been like minor stat increases, like instead of dealing 6 damage, it deals 12 damage or something like that. But the perk when you do this as well is you unlock an artifact of whatever the level of the card is. And those are like similar to SNKRX, like these kind of overarching like buffs to your general rule set, like all people in your front row get +1 attack or something like that. So then you try and combine those things and get synergies, or there's certain cards that just try and go specifically after them. So there's a whole strategy there. From the one game that I won, one kind of lesson I took from that is if you get level 6 artifacts, they are pretty busted. And so if you can do that quickly enough, then that's can kind of tip the scales pretty easily. Also, there's like a really good feeling. It'll show like everybody's hit points at any given time. So it's a very good feeling to see yourself like sinking in the rankings, going to like 20 or 15 or something like that and being at the bottom, but then starting to get an awesome build going together and then climbing back up and then like, you know, owning the people at the top and stuff like that. So sometimes there's some cool, like kind of, again, like it was strategy game that we were talking about, like long-term versus short-term planning that you can do where that'll eventually pay off.
Yeah.
Anyway, if nothing else, it has like a very cute cartoony aesthetic that you could take or leave, I guess.
But it seems like there's a mismatch based on everything that you're saying. Like the soft, cute aesthetic seems to run against like the this just sounds really technical to me.
the grindy details of it.
Yeah. And I don't know how much of that is like you know, I've had auto battlers and auto chess described to me many times, and I always like recognize, it's like a chimera or something. Like I recognize individual portions of it. Like, oh, this mechanic is like, oh, that's like a roguelike, and this is like that. But whenever the pieces, you know, come together, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I kind of expected this to be like a sneering kind of storybook. Like, what was that fighting game that was all the clay monsters that were supposed to be cute and then clay just fighter. Absolutely, yeah, mutilated each other. Like, that's what I was kind of expecting, but the art never quite goes that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's particularly great, but I also don't think it's particularly offensive or anything. It's pretty neutral. I understand that, like... it's kind of like the same thing that they do when they design magic sets where, you know, you can start with the mechanics or the art, but often you kind of want to find a marriage of the two. But like I could see very easily when you're designing it, it's like, oh, storybook characters. Let's see what mechanics we can figure out from that of evolving it from there. Mm-hmm. But you're kind of beholden to that, right? After you kind of do that, it's kind of hard to change the theming to something else.
People are
going to
get invested in the lore and the feel and stuff, yeah.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, like for example, like, there's, like, a characters have alignments, like, good or nothing. But then there's, like, buffs with those sorts of things. So, like, if you tried to be like, all right, we don't want to do storybook theme, we want to do something else now, you've already kind of invested mechanically into that, so it's kind of hard to do something else. It's similar. It seems like it's similar to Magic, where it's like you need to come up with a new set if you want to evolve and like make new cards with like different themings. Mm-hmm. But yeah. But other than that, I think it's been kind of enjoyable. I'll probably continue playing it next week and see how much lasting power it has.
Yeah.
I was going to throw out one thing. When you were talking about T-30, it reminded me of a board game, like a co-op small card game that I really liked called We're Doomed. And the premise is it's a co-op card game where you're trying to get off Earth. So you're trying to build a rocket ship. But a rocket ship only has enough seats for some people to go. So it's like, it's best played as like a 12-person card game. Mm-hmm. And so your action is either to do something to contribute resources to the box, which builds a spaceship.
Okay.
And the more resources, the more seats that it has.
Oh, no.
Or you can do something to contribute to your own charisma. And the people who get on the ship are in descending order of charisma. So the most charisma goes in first and then on down the line.
Oh, wow.
And so the funny part about the game is if everyone just contributes resources, everyone can get off the planet.
Uh-huh.
But that does not happen. So
yeah, let's turn the parable of the long forks into a game.
But I've had equal amounts of fun with that as it sounds like what you've had with you. Recommend that card game in for anyone.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds like a great way to start some fights.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, we dug for nostalgia this week. The question was simply, what is your earliest memory of video games?
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, it's hard to say which one came first, playing Space Invaders in the arcade or playing Combat on the Atari 2600. Both would have happened in 1980 when I was 4, and I have fuzzy memories of it, but I clearly recall thinking just how amazing it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know which one. I feel compelled to answer which one of those. Let's say it's the arcade one. That's cool. Yes, it is so decided. Jalo, what does Callum say?
Callum says, playing Asteroid against my brother.
Yeah, Asteroid's is tough. I didn't get a hold of that for a while. I really only ever stuck to the middle of the screen when I was young and played that. Ben, what does Douglas say?
Douglas says, getting an NES and playing Super Mario Brothers, and I was hooked since.
Yeah. That's pretty similar to mine. I think that would be a lot of folks's, actually. Would be similar to that. Dennis, what does Sean say?
Sean says, I can barely remember playing on the Commodore 64, so I have no idea what the games were on my first true gaming memory, So my first true gaming memory is Duck Hunt on the NES. Felt so futuristic firing the gun controller at the screen to hit the ducks.
Yeah.
That really did feel like hardware that was like, this shouldn't exist. We're not that advanced.
Oh, no. We're not eating food pills. Come on. Like, I'm shooting virtual ducks with a real gun, kind of. Mm-hmm. If this was 4 studios ago, I would have had the Duck Hunt gun, the NES zapper right here to click into the microphone, but I don't have it here. It's out in my it's out on my keepsake shelves. So we're lucky that I'm not here. I don't have that.
I hear it in my head anyway.
Let's see. Sean says, Dustin says, Paperboy with my brother, circa 1990. Dustin has shared some very cute photographs of him and, what appears to be his sibling. Mm-hmm. And I believe his mom, or maybe an older sister here. Yeah, I love these old photos.
Why do the 90s look like the 70s now?
I love it. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I shared a, cause I was, it was the 30th anniversary of the, Super Nintendo. And I shared an old photo of me on Twitter, of me, playing Mega Man X for the first time. My grandma's trailer, of the aforementioned, what's your like favorite game, video game, your first video game setup question that we did on the free play. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, looking through old photographs, trying to find more like here's Cole playing video games stuff, because that is all very cute.
Legit, no one has ever caught a photo of me playing a video game because my family didn't really take a whole lot of pictures when I was growing up, and they definitely weren't going to waste the film because it was so expensive on something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anybody born, let's say, after like 1995, probably was not conscious of a time before of a time before photographs were effectively free.
Yeah,
you know, so the idea of like either like let's kill this role or don't waste that exposure, you know, just wild. I don't mean to go into old man yells at cloud territory, but here we are. Jala, what does Tom say?
Tom says, centipede. I was just verbal enough to know some words and communicate, but I didn't have the coordination to actually progress. I'd watch my dad play because I couldn't. Eventually, I learned how to play the game because new levels had new colors. That's probably the best indicator of my age.
Nice. Let's send this to a child development expert and see if they can pinpoint like how many months old Tom was. Let's see, Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, watching my brother play on our old Commodore VIC-20, he was playing a game like Asteroid called Omega Race, and I thought it was great. First game I remember playing myself was probably Captain Comic in the late 80s. It was an old PC platformer, and it's still pretty fun to play now.
Yeah. I am very happy that we are not running into... It was Halo 3. Excuse me. Sorry, I turned to dust. I turned to dust partially when I said that. Yeah, we've got, you know, it's all olds here, which is nice. I don't know when the VIC-20 was, but I assume it wasn't too far into the 90s at the latest. Yeah, let's see. Dennis, what does David say?
David says, my earliest memory is playing the first level of a side-scrolling Batman game on Game Gear and not realizing that there was a platform to jump onto. So I just replayed the first, like, 3 minutes until you got to, quote-unquote, the end. Eventually, I just got lucky and jumped in the right spot.
If I'm thinking of which one it is, it might have been, I mean, any of the ones based on the movies for the Game Gear, so like Batman Returns or Batman Forever. Those games are dark as shit, even on the even on the Game Gear with the backlit screen. So you probably didn't know there was a platform because you couldn't see it. So yeah. I absolve young David of any guilt over not being able to perceive the platform. That was the game's fault.
This is the second episode, sir, recent memory, where you've absolved people of gaming sins. Is this a new? Is this because you decided that you were a cleric last week or whatever on the free play?
I just want people to feel okay. I want them to not have to carry around a burden of assuming that there's something, you know, wrong about the way that they approach something, you know?
Should it be called a Halo Mary?
Oh, my.
Oh. let's see here. Gwen says, the year 1993, my dad owned an Atari 2600 from his college days and bins full of cartridges. I know I played more, but for some reason I remember barnstorming more than any other games. I wonder what three-year-old me's high score was. Barnstorming is a good game. That was a good, an Activision one. So, like, it was really well optimized and had big, smoothly, big, colorful graphics. Ran great. Yeah. 3-year-old, you had good taste. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Jala, what does Case say?
Case says the year 95-96. The place, the basement of my parents' friend's house. The game, Link to the Past on SNES. Cheering and yelling as we spent 2 hours trying to make it into and through the intro castle dungeon section.
Hmm. That's a pretty good one as far as first game experiences go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, what does Roop say?
Roop says, around 96, 97, staying at my grandmother. My uncle has been partying probably and not hungover. At 7 a.m., I sneak into his room and turn on the old 386 and start playing Doom with speakers cranked up.
Yeah. Oh man, that's good. You terrorize that uncle. let's see here. Dennis, what does Corbin say?
Corbin says, I got an OG Game Boy for Christmas in like 1994. Played a ton of Tetris and Super Mario Land that day and got Pokemon later, on which was the first game I ever completed.
Hmm. Neat. Let's see. Again, Game Boy is a good one. Yeah. Rookie says, as a little kid, maybe 1986 or 87, I played E.T. at a cousin's house. I immediately ended up stuck in a hole that I couldn't get out of, like everyone else who played the game. I'm crying because I thought E.T. would be stuck in the hole forever thanks to me. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
E.T.'s parents got broke up because of something you did.
Oh, wow.
Oh gosh, I absolve you. E.T. is not in that hole. And finally, Jello, what does Eli say?
Eli says, the highlight of trips to visit one of our family members, getting to play with their PlayStation 1. I specifically remember playing the Batman and Robin game and something Google tells me was called Jersey Devil.
Mm.
I was certainly terrible at playing these, but I was still obsessed.
Yeah, Jersey Devil is a bad like 3D mascot platformer. It's not a good one.
That was also like an urban legend from the old days, right? Because wasn't there an X-File?
Yeah, cryptid. Yeah. It's a cryptid. It would like pick up. They're like people would find cattle, like picked up and thrown across power lines, and they blamed on the Jersey Devil. His wings, they say. Yeah. Ben, you found the picture. You found the photograph of young Cole playing Mega Man X.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just a follow up on that. All that bedding that's in that photo there, this is the room behind where the person was taking the photograph was where the couch was. Mm-hmm. Behind which I had my or what would have been my small TV. Maybe I moved it to the big TV because nobody was home, possibly here. Also, we were living in that trailer because we had sold our house and were getting ready to get a new one, and then the deal on the new one fell through. So we had no place to be. Yeah. So that's why that happened. Additionally, my first memory comes from another trailer. This, based on the timeline, this would have been like maybe like 1989 or 1990. It was before we moved. To let me cut that out. I about said the name of one of the streets where I grew up, which is definitely a security question. No. I'm really
young. Damn it! This entire question is to get cold.
Just social engineering. who was your favorite first grade teacher? Real basic stuff. I just remember being on the bunk bed in the bedroom that I shared with Chris, on the top bunk, watching him play Super Mario Brothers on the little TV that was back in the room. And if my parents are to be believed, I have no direct memory of this, but I was like begging him to continue playing so I could keep watching, because I was too young to play it myself. So if he tried to stop, I threw a fit.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
that actually stirred an even earlier video game memory than I was going to share. Ooh. Oh man,
huh. Jala, how about you?
So I talked about this the last time we were talking about this similar kind of thing when we were talking about the first gaming spaces, and I'd mentioned that I played Atari 2600 with my dad, and I couldn't figure out what the game was that I was playing with my dad, because I just had no recollection of what the name was. And I found out what it was finally in the interim since the last time we were talking about this similar thing. It was called Wizard of War. WOR. And Greg, thank you, helped me to get to the bottom of this, being someone who is an avid fan of older games. So yeah, like that's the game that I played. And this game was hard as hell, because it was so flickery on the Atari 2600 that like the little pellet looking things, which are just like the bullets from the gun, or like from the critters' mouths or whatever, just like flickered in and out of existence, just like the critters. And so, like, it was hard for small me to track what was going on in this maze with, like, the music also was, like, slow at first. And as you kill stuff, it gets, increasing in tempo and stuff. And it was really disturbing. But, like, it's funny. I believe it was Mr. Reciprocity from the community said that they played the same game, but on Commodore 64, and shared like footage of it. And I was like, oh my god, I feel so cheated, because it would look so much better on C64.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was like, wow. You mean they're not supposed to be flickering all the time?
Oh. Yeah, do yourself a favor and never play the arcade
detailed
one. Yeah.
And that the audio was better. Anyway, that's not the point. So my memory was this game and playing this and having my dad and I coming in from the left and the right of the screen into a maze to fight whatever little critters were in there. So, yeah.
Nice.
That's the only time he ever played games with me. Oh. So.
Well, it's nice that your first memory is, a bonding moment.
He doesn't remember now that he ever played video games. It's only me. I'm the only one that remembers that.
Ben, how about you?
The first one I remember is me and my brother playing Super and him giving me Luigi.
Playing what? I'm sorry?
Super Mario Brothers. And him giving me Luigi and him playing as Mario in the two-player version. And then me realizing, like, this is my first lesson in, like, unfairness, I guess, or
you get the scraps.
I get the character you don't want to play as. Wait. And that pattern continued for a while.
Oh, nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I thought I was doing a deep cut on like the Tiger Electronics games, if you guys remember those, like the little handheld dudes. I even pinned down, I think the one specifically that I remember is Super Off-Road.
Okay.
But those are more toys. You know, those came out of the toy aisle. The first video game proper, now that I remembered specifically because of what you said earlier, was going to a friend down the street's house. He had a computer, and we would play Dig Dug and Duke Nukem 2.
Oh, yeah.
And this was, I was young enough that I had not yet learned how to tie my own shoes.
Mm-hmm.
but whenever it was time for me to go, I would insist to his mom, like, no, I'm almost there. I really want to practice. I want to tie my own shoes so I could delay and watch for longer.
Oh, yeah.
And just basically kneel there until she called my bluff. But yeah, dig. And I remembered it was Duke Nukem. I'm guessing from looking at screenshots that it was Duke Nukem 2.
Yeah. Well, definitely, it wouldn't have been Duke Nukem 3D. That'd be a weird game to let a kid that young play. But Duke Nukem 2 was just it was an Apogee made side scroller, right?
Yeah, this is from the side scrolling days.
Yeah.
So this is before we made the jump to the third dimension.
Yeah.
But yeah, good times. I haven't thought about that in forever.
Nostalgia's fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh man, good question. And thanks everybody for sharing. I hope that this helped you remember your own good times back in the day. From this point forward, we're just going to be the audio version of the magazine Reminisce. But not about our childhood. It's just going to be Reminisce. So we'll talk about like lead toys in the 30s.
You know? We're playing new games. Cole, you played two games that have come out less than a week.
True. Yeah. But also, I'm old as shit. You know,
you're old as shit. Excuse me.
No.
Was that youngin?
No, you're. Oh man, no, I was not. I was not trying to say anything about you. I'm just, well, you know, all of us are irrelevant to advertisers, so it's fine. thank you, everybody, for participating in this. If you would like to get in on this in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for posting this.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us or that are concerning. In this case, Ben, I don't want to waste any time. What's happening in China?
Yeah, so there's an announcement the past week that they're making a change in how long that they're allowing people to play video games, specifically kids under the age of 18. So this was something I actually didn't know before that, but apparently they had regulations around this before.
Hour
this
and a half just a day. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is like a tightening of that regulation. And so what they're saying now is that kids under the age of 18 won't be able to play during weekdays. And they'll be limited to an hour a day on the weekends, specifically Friday, Saturday, Sunday from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. There's holidays, I think, where they can play longer. But the rationale behind this is that they were trying to prevent kids from becoming addicted to video games.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the way they were going about doing that. So without discussing too many more of the details, I just kind of wanted to maybe talk about this and see what you guys thought about it.
It's bad.
Yeah, it does seem like a weird approach to the problem. Instead of like regulating games that are addicting, just being like, all right, nobody's going to play this now.
Or asking what underlying conditions are leading to people spending their youth like that.
Well, and then too, it's like, okay, so the government is now doing the parenting for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. Not really. No.
That's, yeah. Also, like, this this is built off of the back of, like, it couldn't be executed if there wasn't, an infrastructure in place for just like technological restrictions, technologically mm-hmm. restricting people's behavior, and there's a certain amount of surveillance in that. This is bad. I agree. You know, there's too much video games for anybody to play. You know, I think kids should do more stuff. This feels this does not feel right to me.
I mean, I can speak as someone who, I mean, video games were like pseudo taboo in my house for a while and very tightly controlled time-wise when they were in the house. Mm-hmm. That is the fastest way to make it an object of fascination.
Yeah.
as obviously, you know, evidenced by your presence on this show.
Yeah. No, I mean, completely unironically, I think a large part of the reason why I remain as into video games as I have was just like how tantalizing they seemed when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like that, this is going to deep seed some stuff that's going to come back to bite the government in the ass as these kids hit adulthood.
Well, perhaps this is a country known for having very top down approaches, though, like with the one child, right?
Yeah.
Where like they've done this sort of thing in the past, and everyone, they kind of have a culture of people being like, well, this is kind of what you have to do.
Yeah.
There is one quote.
The one child policy did come back to bite them in the ass pretty hard.
Yeah, that's
true. That's true. But I'm saying that, like, I don't think just because it's a bad policy, I don't think that necessarily means that people won't follow it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to read this justification from the article because I thought this was interesting. But it says many parents said that teenagers' addiction to online games seriously affected their studies and physical and mental health, leading to a series of social problems, making many parents suffer. If that is like the overall rationalization for it, I think that like one, the video games leading to social problems, I think has been shown to be not the case, where people have better social lives if they communicate with one another in games and play games with friends. But then the other piece of this too is like, yeah, I don't think this would fit in like US policy just because I don't, you know, like, why is it not the parents' responsibility to take care of their kids? Like, why are you making a government rule and then overfitting it on people?
We can't get people to agree that a mask will, we can't get people to believe in the germ theory of disease. This absolutely wouldn't fly over here. Yeah.
Also, counterpoint, have you been in any Call of Duty or League of Legends chat room?
Mm-hmm.
Said with complete, facetiousness there.
Man. And it's interesting to think about like the business around this as well. As far as like esports goes, this kind of prevents like people from trying to participate in that in any respect, because
developers have to be furious. Especially, I mean, think about how much Blizzard has been kissing the ass of the Chinese government for the past several years.
Mm-hmm.
Think about all the concessions, like, basically, all of these large developers have gotten in bed with Chinese counterparts and undoubtedly gotten compromised from a data standpoint, et cetera, as a result, only to have the Chinese government be like, okay, thanks, bye.
Yeah. I think that's why you don't make accommodations for totalitarian regimes, or at the very least authoritarian,
dangerous bedfellows. Huh? There's another quote from Tencent, which is a Chinese gaming company that does mobile stuff. They mentioned that the revenue for people under the age of 16, not 18, was only 2.6% of their gross as a company. So
That's them just sweatily rushing out to a microphone in front of their shareholders. Like, please, dear God, don't sell.
It seems weird, though, anytime you restrict something like this, where it's like, I don't know. So there's a couple things. Like, one is I do think there's some truth behind where they're coming from, in the sense that you have like mobile games that are basically like casinos that are indistinguishable from slot machines. Mm-hmm. And you have like interesting games that are coming out, but they're all on the same platform and they're all treated the same. They're relatively indistinguishable from one another. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem, because like one of those is very abusive towards kids, and the other is hopefully not. So I can see wanting to address that problem in some way. This doesn't seem like it's the best way to go about it, however. And then the other piece of like denying something from someone for, you know, like 18 years and then giving them like unrestricted access usually seems like a bad idea as well. That's kind of like a similar problem that Americans have with drinking, where it's like there's much more binge drinking here than in countries like Germany, where like kids will drink when they're younger and it's not as big of a deal, and they learn how to do it responsibly. I'll say that much.
You don't develop a healthy relationship with it. Yeah.
I also wonder enforcement on this. Like, do you literally just have to put in an old enough birthday on an account, because that happens all the time anyway?
People are going to get around it. I mean,
it could be some government official is pissed, and they set this out as we're solving it, and anyone who really wants to get around it can.
I mean,
I could see that being the case. I could see also them being very strict about it. So
yeah,
yeah.
The the Chinese, like especially tech literate youth public, are exceptionally good at getting around things and flouting rules. I'm not terribly concerned about people figuring out a way. It's just it's a bad rule, and bad rules need to go.
Yeah, like I know another example of that is like everyone if they want unrestricted access to the internet. However, I think with this policy, since they're saying specifically no one can play games under 18 from like Monday to Friday or Monday to Thursday, that's much more enforceable, right? Because it's like if you see a person playing a video game, you can immediately punish them. Whereas before, since it was a vague 1.5 hours, it's harder to prove like, oh, they played for longer than that time.
Yeah.
If you just witness it.
We're getting beyond my knowledge of like how accounts work and how things are gonna tracked.
But yeah. Interesting.
It'd be cool if they treated the social problems again that are leading people into the addictive behavior as opposed to this symptom, because you know, things are just gonna be replaced with other stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other things about that?
No, not exactly. No, although mine is vaguely related to that.
Yeah, so it's related next. to Tencent. Yeah. Well, what's your story? What's going on?
Yeah. So Yakuza creator Nagoshi Toshihiro is reportedly in final negotiations with NetEase and is poised to leave Sega after 32 years. As of April 1st of this year, he was appointed Sega's creative director as part of a wider management and organizational restructure. And apparently that didn't sit well with him because he's in speaks with NetEase, which is a Chinese company, rival to Tencent, for being basically setting up his own team and creating new games. So he wants to definitely continue creating games. He doesn't want to be a creative director, you know.
Yeah.
Once a contract is finalized, at least, that'll be the plan. If this does, in fact, happen, it will be a clear statement of that company's intention to further expand its scope outside of China, particularly given the current crackdown on video game addiction that we just discussed.
Yeah, I can definitely empathize with Nagoshi not wanting to be Peter Principled up into management if he wants to continue, you know, being involved in development like that. You know, is perfectly understandable. Yeah,
for sure.
It means weird stuff, like combined with like Judgment, possibly like that series ending. You know, because of weird little like actor like negotiation problems, and like Yakuza going away from being a brawler and being like turn-based, kind of like at that like moment of transition, if Nagoshi leaves, then all of a sudden like, oh boy, like who's at the rudder, basically, would be the question. Yeah
For sure. So that's a big deal, and it's not an official, you know, like it's definitely a go, but you know, if he's in speaks with somebody, like somebody's going to take him and give him, you know, like carte blanche to make games. So he's just got to find where that's going to be next for him.
Yeah. No, he's got a lot of good years left, you know, in front of him, and he's made, you know, excellent things. I mean, Yakuza has never been more popular, you know? Yeah. Well, I hope he gets to make cool stuff, because I like it when cool stuff is in the world. I've got one. This is just a brief, it is a brief, a thing exists, outside of the China, hour limit. Not an awful lot is happening in the news that I could see, but this is cool. There's a roguelike side scrolling puzzle golf horror game coming out.
Okay. That sounds like for some reason.
All the genres.
Just all of them. It's coming out in 2022. It is called Cursed to Golf. I like the side scrolling golf kind of subgenre, a la Super Stickman Golf. But the idea is you're playing as somebody who is trapped in Purgatory, and of course Purgatory is a big golf course, and you have to golf really well and navigate kind of these platforming like hazards to get around and play well enough to make your way out of Purgatory. So it's like Hades, but with nine irons. Yeah, seems pretty cool to me. It hits a lot of my buttons, you know, from both from golf to the kind of like spooky, cute kind of aesthetic to it. Yeah, I'm paying attention to this. I think it'll be cool, and I wish it was coming out sooner.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But then again, it's basically 2022 already, so...
Oh my god, I know. It's like
time's moving too quickly.
Yeah.
They have something in that game called an Eternity. Of course. Which is a fun pun.
Oh man. And then Dennis, what's going on with Shaggy?
Yeah, what's going on with Shaggy is his final form, the not abomination, but the fighter that we've all known him to be for so long, is finally being recognized. I guess there is an animated Mortal Kombat movie coming out, Mortal Kombat Legends: Battle of the Realms. And by the way, can we stop calling things Legends?
Yeah,
I feel like everything has subtitle Legends now.
Yeah, no, Legends is the new Revelations.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. But anyway, there was a trailer for it. It's Scorpion jumps down and does some karate type stuff in front of the WB logo. Mm-hmm. And then that logo pops open and Shaggy in a green flaming final form style punches through and says, "Zoinks, get over here, man," and pulls Scorpion into the logo with him. So, you know, just the silliest thing imaginable. Apparently this is a riff on an earlier one where Daffy Duck had been derping around and Scorpion pulled him inside the logo. Mm-hmm. And it all just reinforces that really Mortal Kombat is just adult slapstick. That's all it is.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, the Ultra Instinct Shaggy meme has been around for a while now. Mm-hmm. And this is like the most official recognition that it's ever gotten, which is kind of fun. So I'm just biding my time until he actually shows up in a Mortal Kombat game, which at this point seems inevitable.
Yeah, but then like he would be too powerful, so it'd have to be like the One Punch Man fighting game where the main character is just a power-up that shows up at the very end to finish off the match, and it's all the other characters, you know? So instead of being a fatality, it'd be a Shaggality, you know? zoinks him right into a spike pit. Yeah,
man, Shaggality now makes me think of an Austin Powers fighting game.
Oh god.
Oh man. I was at the I had a psychiatrist appointment this morning. I was over at the community counseling center, and as I was waiting, the TV in the waiting room was playing some you know, newer Scooby-Doo cartoon, and it was just the most bizarre thing to see out of context. Because like I was just watching, it was the end of an episode, and Rasputin, you know, the Edwardian era Russian mystic who indirectly got the czars killed, you know, Rasputin was like tearing into the kids and saying, basically, "I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for that filthy democracy loving dog." Talking about Scooby-Doo. I was like, what is happening? How do y'all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. This has been level number 384. We're getting up there. Like I said, no episode next week. We're gonna be taking off for Labor Day. I hope that you can take off. Take some time for yourself as well. Think about the labor movement and all of that. Go read about cool strikes that are happening, like the one down in Alabama. Been going for 6 months now? Ridiculous. Yeah. Otherwise, though, you know what you can do. You can back the Patreon. You can participate in the multiplayer at facebook.com/ the level podcast. You can rate a review, tell your friends, all of that kind of stuff. Dennis, you had a bunch of media appearances for Deck of Wonders. Are there any that you would like to draw people's attention to if they would like to learn more?
They've all been cool, and they've all featured a unique piece of art. So just go to the Deck of Wonders socials that I'll mention in a second, and you can find all of them.
Cool. Yeah. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No.
Don't think so.
All right. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams at the Duckfeed Twitch channel. That's Duckfeed TV. Weekdays, some weekdays during the day doing Chrono Cross right now, and then weekend nights doing horror games.
Mm-hmm. I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me and all that Deck of Wonders art I mentioned at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words on Twitter.
I'm Jalachan in places. You can find me there, as well as all those screenshots and crap that from all the games I've been playing.
And stick around for some titles. Kit, who's got what? Okay.
I have direct
chicks. Okay. Yeah.
Directly chicks.
My hat is a bird. Yeah.
I have It's a Happy Baffled.
Okay.
And then finally, Shigality.
I have Paper Morrowind.
Ooh. All right. Is that all?
Yep. Cool.
Ben?
I only remembered Halo Mary. What's that?
Oh, sorry, you cut out.
I only remembered Halo Mary, but I didn't watch that because it was my own.
Okay. If only I had that amount of restraint. I have Alucard looking. I didn't do anything on the back
with
of that.
All the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. and then I have, Legends is the New Revelations.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm not really a fan of Halo Mary.
Neither am I. To be honest.
How dare you?
No, sorry.
I want to stump for negative clicks per minute. I think that's got a good ring to it.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Jolly?
Shrug. I don't have any feelings.
Okay.
Aww. No feelings.
No.
But what do you think of the title?
Okay. Yeah, let's go with that one. I don't feel strongly enough about any of them. And I will defer to your to your strongly expressed opinion.
Excellent.
Cool. Yeah, well, I hope everybody has a good week.